Greetings in Jesus' precious name. Welcome to each one present this morning. I trust you can feel at home in the house of God. I too want to say thank you to our congregation for being supportive in a time of death and loss in the Anthony Weaver family. May you continue to bless their lives and be a comfort to them in coming weeks. Just remember to continue to pray for them and their loss. Let's also remember the Heindel family, especially Steve this week. I think this week is 3 years that Judy's life was taken. Let's remember them this week as well. For an opening passage, you can open your Bibles to Job chapter 12. Job chapter 12, I'm going to read verses 1 through 10. We're breaking into the middle of a discourse between Job and his three friends, and Job is speaking. Job 12, verse 1, and Job answered and said, "No doubt, but ye are the people, and wisdom shall die with you. But I have understanding as well as you. I am not inferior to you, yea, who knoweth not such things as these? I am as one mocked of his neighbor, who calleth upon God, and he answereth him. The just upright man is laughed to scorn. He that is ready to slip with his feet is as a lamp despised in the thought of him that is at ease. The tabernacles of robbers prosper, and they that provoke God are secure, into whose hand God bringeth abundantly. But ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee, or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind?" Note especially verses 7 through 10. Job says that we can be taught by the beast. And the fowls of the air can tell us things. The earth is able to teach us. And the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. And especially verse 10, in whose hand, in God's hand, is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. This morning I'd like to speak about the miracle of life. The miracle of life. What is life? Someone have a definition of life? What is life? We've been reading there from the book of Job about some things that are alive. But what defines life? What is life? You can keep thinking about that question. What is life? We'll come back to that question. What is life? What do you and I comprehend about life? What does God think life is? Earth has over 2 million species of living things. That's the globe that you live in. And there are over 2 million species of living things. In the outstart this morning, I'd just like you to help me to name some of these 2 million species of living things. See what you know about the species that live around you. Biologists have divided the plant world into different families. One of them is the mint family. And we have peppermint and spearmint and lavender and rosemary and sage in the mint family. There's more, but we have at least those. That gives you an idea of which family that is. And we have the parsley family, which includes the carrot and the dill and the Queen Anne's lace. And we have the pea family. Maybe you could tell me some of the plants that are in the pea family. Anybody know? Pretty common. Peas, of course, green peas that you have for lunch. What else? Well, beans and peanuts. Alfalfa and clover and vetch. And the redbud trees and the locust tree are all in the pea family. Some of those are somewhat surprising of where they fit. Can anyone tell me what family the blackberries are in? The rose family, thank you. The blackberries and the raspberries and the strawberries are all in the rose family, and of course the roses as we know them. And in the rose family is also a whole list of trees, such as apricot and cherry and peach. Does anyone know what family the kale family, the kale plant is in? This is an odd one, so easy to remember maybe because it's odd, but you wouldn't think this unless you know it. What family is the kale family? Well, it's in the mustard family. The cabbage and the kale and the turnip and the radish and the cauliflower. Then we have the cashew family, which includes the cashew tree, of course, and also the poison sumac. The poison ivy and the poison oak are all in the cashew family. Grasses. Grasses cover over 1/3 of the land area of the earth. Wheat, barley, rye, oats, rice, and corn. These grasses yield more than 1 billion tons of food in a year. Then you have turf grasses, ornamental grasses, sugar cane. What color is grass? Can you children tell me that? Yes. Green. Are you sure? Okay, good. Would it matter if it wasn't green? Would it change your world if the grass was red? Well, God made it green. I believe there's good reasons for that. You could study into that. I won't enlarge on that, but grass is green for a reason. God has designed it that way. Then we have the tree family, which you could list a whole multitude of trees that would fit into that family. We have ferns, we have mosses, we have mushrooms, and we have flowers. I think those are the basic families of the plant world. Most of the plant world that you know would fit under that. And all of those plants have life in them. We're trying to describe life in our minds, what life is. Well, all of those families of plants have life in them. Then we have mammals, which is a tremendous list of animals. Everything from the platypus to the kangaroo to the rhinoceros and the deer and the fox and the dog. Many, many more that you're familiar with, and many that you're not familiar with in other countries. One of the inspirations for this message in thinking about the beast teaching us something and the world about us being able to teach us something, as Job says, has been the last couple weeks living in this cold weather, very cold weather, and observing an animal at our house. We have a pet dog at our house, and our dog doesn't live in the house. He lives outside 100% of the time. He has dry places to go and places that he can get to that are warmer. But right through the coldest times, I found him sitting outside the house on our deck. We have an elevated deck out from the side of the kitchen there. In the coldest times, I watch him sit out there on that deck, ice-covered deck, 0 degrees, and not a bit alarmed. Not seeking for a warmer place, very content to be there. What does that teach us about God's creation? We can learn a lot from the mammals. Another family of life is the birds. You can make a tremendous list of birds, and it's good to do that. Good practice. I have a whole list here, but I'm not going to read them. And there's many, many more you could add to the bird list. Why did God create them? What are their purposes? It's good to think about that. Meditate on that. Then we have the reptiles. There are 19 families of reptiles. Lizards, snakes, turtles, crocodilians, and alligators are some of them. There are 240 species of turtles, by the way. Why did God create them? Then we have amphibians, frogs and toads. There's 2,000 species of them, salamanders, and caecilians. Then we have the very large family of fish, which there is 21,000 species of fish. And then we have, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the very largest group. And that is the invertebrates. Invertebrates. Invertebrates, arthropods, range in size from the giant king crab, who has a 10-foot leg, to microscopic mites. Millipedes and centipedes and mites and ticks would be in this group. Scientists would tell us if you could somehow see all the animals on the earth at once, if you could just get them all in front of you, 90% of them would be invertebrates. 1.8 million species. And they're probably the species that we know little about. But the fact is, when you take a walk in the woods, you step on them. Some of them you kill. But many of them are under the cushion of the leaves, and your footprint doesn't hurt them. The same when you walk on a grass field. There are many, many thousands and millions of these little creatures under your foot that can live under your foot because of the cushion of the grass. Then there are insects, locusts and grasshoppers, crickets, roaches, dragonflies and bedbugs, and then aphids and butterflies, and mosquitoes and ants and spiders. They're all alive. They all have life in them. Then we have the mollusks, the clams, the snails, the starfish, the sponges and worms. And the smallest protozoa is a one-celled animal. But there is still life in them. And then there is life in you and I this morning. According to our attendance chart, we have 175 souls here this morning. Warm bodies that are alive and breathing, and hearts that are beating. And they all represent life. Plants, animals, and humans are all made up of tissues. All tissues are divided into a number of cells. A cell principle states all living things are composed of living units called cells and cell products, and that all cells come only from pre-existing cells. Cells do all the work. Cells manufacture all the materials that are used for life. We know that we as human beings need some things for life. You'll go home and eat lunch after this service is over, and those materials will be used by your body to support the life that is in you. But the cells in the plants have manufactured that material for you to eat, or the cells in the animals. Cells communicate with each other. Cells grow and reproduce. What is life? We don't have all the answers, but the mysteries of life itself are locked up in tiny cells. Cells are measured in micrometers, and a micrometer is a millionth of a meter. So that's very small. Bacteria cells are the smallest. They are 2 micrometers long. And if you put 50,000 of them in a row, they would only be an inch long. So that's how small a micrometer is. That's what we measure cells with. That's what scientists measure them with. You have a smooth muscle cell in your stomach that may be up to 500 micrometers long. And 500 micrometers is the size of a grain of sand. The largest cell. Anyone happen to know what that is? Interesting one. The largest cell, what's that? Well, it's the yolk of an ostrich egg. Approximately the size of a baseball. That's the largest cell. plants contain millions of cells in their roots and shoot system. A human has more than a trillion cells in his body. Now that word trillion, it's really easy for us to read over, but I'd like to try to help you to understand what a trillion is. In this paint jar, I have rice grains. And I'll give three of you children the opportunity to guess, see who can get the closest. How many rice grains do you think are in this jar? You have to be quick, so if you want to guess, raise your hand. I'll give you three chances, see who can get the closest. Like to guess? How many are in here?
Everybody scared? Yes.
A thousand.
A thousand. One guess is a thousand. Any more? Yes.
A million.
A million. And way in the back, Zachary. 5 million. 1,000 and 1 million and 5 million.
Well, you're all over the board. That's okay. There's 20,000 in here. Now, I didn't count them all piece for piece, but I did count how many are on a teaspoon, and I put teaspoons in and I multiplied. So I might be 100 off, but there's 20,000 grains of rice in this jar. Talking about numbers. There's approximately 1 pound of rice in this jar. So 20,000 rice grains equal 1 pound. And I went and did the calculations. I just told you that the human body has a trillion cells in it. Now, how big a container do you think I would need to put a trillion rice grains in? I'm going to let the adults answer this question. I'm going to give them three guesses. I'm going to give them a hint that they want to go by the semi-load, 24 tons in a semi-load. How many semi-loads do you think there would be in a trillion grains of rice? Three. Who will be first? Who wants to guess? How many semi-loads of rice in a trillion grains? Yes.
10.
Two more?
Give it a try.
Five.
Any more?
20.
5, 10, and 20. We're talking about a trillion grains of rice. We have 1,000, and then we have 1 million, and then we have 1 trillion. You can go home and figure this out, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but if I'm correct, that's 1,041 semi-loads of rice, 24 tons each. You're welcome to figure that out, but I'll give that to you for the idea of a trillion. A trillion cells in your human body. What is life? What is life? Turn to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. Verse 16. For by God were all things created, that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. So we could go back to the Genesis account. And in Genesis 1, we would find the beginning of all life. Because God is the origin of life. Everything that we say that is alive this morning is alive because God made it to be alive. God created it. And God has made it so that it still exists today. Everything that is alive must be fed. And God is feeding everything that is alive in this world. 6,000 years later, he's still feeding everything that's alive. Everything is consisting because of him. What is life? Turn to Romans 1. Romans chapter 1. Romans 1 and verse 19. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that we are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Would you like to understand the invisible things? Would you like to understand the things that are too small for you to see? Would you like to understand spiritual things? You can begin to understand them by observing life around you. In your daily walk. No, we will never comprehend it all, but God wants us to comprehend what we can, and we can comprehend more if we look at the things that are visible around us. How often do you and I walk through life without even thinking about the life that is around us? It would do us well to observe the life that is around us. Have you ever struggled with the question, is God real? Is there really a God? How can you know the answer to that question? By looking at life around you and observing it and dissecting and trying to figure out how it works. That's how you do that. You meditate, you take time to think on the things that are visible that God has created, and you will become convinced that there is a God. Life. What is life? Turn to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. Jesus talked about life many, many times. There's many scriptures we could turn to, but we'll look at this one. Matthew chapter 10. Verse 29, very familiar verses. I'm going to back up to verse 26. Verse 26. Matthew 10, verse 26. Fear them not, therefore. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness, that speak ye in the light, and what ye hear in the ear, that preach ye upon the housetops. And fear not them which kill the body. Notice we have life being taken away here. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul. But rather fear him, God in heaven, which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father, which is in heaven. What is life? Well, life is something that God watches after. You see here that God isn't void of understanding. If a sparrow falls, one of the poorest, smallest creatures that you could think of in our world, if a sparrow falls, God knows that it did. And so if life ceases to exist, God knows about it. And if new life comes into being, God knows about it. Every time. Even down to the hairs of your head. God knows their number. God is interested in life. God is the one who gave the command, thou shalt not kill, to mankind. And that had to do with life. And he was speaking very clearly to the children of Israel. They understood very well his meaning when he said, thou shalt not kill. He was not talking about killing an eggplant in the garden. He was talking about killing a human being. And the command was, thou shalt not kill. And that command is still for us today. We live in a killing world. We live in a world that's full of fighting and wars. And we live in a country that's not afraid to sniff out the life of an unborn child. But mark it down, God sees. God sees because it's life. Wherever life is present, God is there. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 8. There's many things we can learn from life, and I don't know that I have or can possibly give you a definition this morning of life in one sentence. If you were to look it up in the dictionary, you would find a lot of definitions, and there's reason for that. It is very broad, but we've touched some of the things that life is. We've endeavored to give some sort of a definition, and I would like to say, as you go from this place in this world of life, regardless if you're thinking about plant life, animal life, human life, whatever life it is, the life that you walk on and you step on and you touch as you go from this place, walk carefully. Observe what God has placed in front of your eyes. Love life. God does. All kinds of it. God loves life. You love life. Ecclesiastes 8, my closing verse, Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 8. We're looking directly here at life of mankind. The life that God breathed into the breath of mankind when he created Adam and Eve. Starting at verse 7, I'm going to read verse 7 and verse 8. For God knoweth not that which he be, for who can tell him when it shall be? I read that wrong. For he knoweth not that which shall be, for who can tell when it shall be? Talking about purposes and judgments of God. There's a lot of things that we don't know about life and about mankind. Verse 8, there is no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death. And there is no discharge in that war, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. What's he telling us in this verse? Well, he's telling us something else about life. He's talking about the life of a human soul. And he's telling us that there's no man, no woman on the face of the earth that has the power over life. It's God that has the power over life. If something is brought into existence and is alive, it is because of God, not because of man. Man can feed it, fertilize it. He can endeavor to make it grow better, but he can't make it grow. He can't make it live. Man can't do that in the plant world. He can't do it in the animal world. And much less can he do it in the human world. It is God that removes the spirit of man when he dies. It is God that decides the destiny and the timing of our lives. We might question that sometimes, why that is that way, but it's a principle that's true. I have a father-in-law that's laying on his deathbed, as you know, and that deathbed gets longer and longer and longer. But there's not a man or woman on the face of the earth that can decide his time. And as we walk in this life, God opens and closes the doors of life. Sometimes he opens doors suddenly. Sometimes he holds the door back for a long time and we wonder why. Well, it's because he's God. And because he understands about life. May we be intrigued with life as we walk on the face of this earth. May we walk carefully. May we observe the life that is around us so that we can learn about things that are unseen and hard to understand. Shall we kneel for prayer?